and Linda.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much, Sunny Boy. This was on a wing and a pair and a prayer. I'm Linda and I'm an alcoholic. So sorry that I slid in under the wire here. I had trouble getting in. And then I couldn't find my phone first off. Then I called myself because the ID was in my phone. So I'm glad to be here. Thank you, Sunny, for inviting me in. And it's really a privilege to share, experience, strength, and hope at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety date is November 3rd of 1980. So not too long from now, November 3rd, if I keep doing what I'm doing, I'll have 43 years of continuous sobriety, walking on the sunny side of the street, no matter what, in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And for that, I'm very grateful. And all right. Resentments. I don't know about anybody else, but when I first got sober, I remember when my first sponsor, I've had two sponsors. I've been with my current sponsor 32 years. My first sponsor, when we got to the fourth step, I sort of mumbled that I didn't think I had any resentments. And of course, I've heard this zillions of times since I've been sober and sponsoring. And I always chuckle because it's so reminiscent of myself. And one of we were actually standing in a primary purpose group in Sacramento, California, where I got sober. It was a podium group. We had three meetings a week, and all the meetings you had to go up to the podium if you were called on to participate. Anyway, the one of the other women in the group, who was a strong, loving sponsor, who wasn't my sponsor, she heard me say that to my sponsor, and she leaned in and said, "You know, honey, you have to be without a resentment to know you've got one, sweetie." And I didn't understand that. I mean, I didn't get mad, I didn't get upset. But I'll never forget this. About 2 a.m., I sat straight up in bed and went, "Oh my God, she insulted me." What does she mean? She's saying all I have is resentment, and that's why I don't think I have any. She was pretty right. So, resentment, if I quote this right, forgive me if it's wrong, but this is what I was told, that it comes from the Latin word, sentire, means to feel, and resentire, resentment, is to refeel. And that couldn't be more true, that resentments, in my drinking, everything pretty much was about resentment. And it was born out of the selfishness and self-centeredness, self-pity, self-seeking. I think that's innate in all of us as alcoholics when we're drinking. And my constant, I was a bar drinker, but I was an everywhere drinker. But boy, I was a bar drinker through and through. And I would, my stories at the bar, which I repeated often ad nauseum, were, do you know what they did to me? Do you know what they said to me? Do you know what they didn't do for me? When am I going to get what I want? When am I going to get what I need? When am I going to get what I deserve? And I remember my first sponsor saying, "Honey, if you got everything you deserved, you probably wouldn't be here." Oh, I thought she was so mean. But those are the things that I quote to this day because she was right. So, and resentments truly have the power to kill us alcoholics. It's talked about in the book that resentment is the number one offender. And everything for me, in my experience, it stemmed from those resentments leaked out everywhere. And I remember after getting sober, I got my first resentment against NAA right away. I mean, there was no, I wasn't picky because it was so automatic for me. And I remember I resented this woman. I didn't like her. She said some truth to me, and boy, that lit me up. And I was complaining to my sponsor about her over and over. And I remember being in my home group one night, and she walked in, and I literally said out loud with my sponsor standing there, "What is she doing here?" I mean, she was a member of the group, right? And, but, you know, one of the things Clancy used to talk about it, you know, that alcoholism is a disease. It's a disease. It's many things. It's a rapacious predator. It's, you know, it's meant, it has no conscience, doesn't care what we love, what we want, what we need, how much money we have or don't, all of that. But it has absolutely no conscience. And in my resentments, the problem with it is I can't, when I was new, and welcome to any people that are new, they used to say in my home group, "You can't fix the thinker with the thinker you've got." And I secretaried the Tuesday 1 p.m. Pacific group meeting every week. And our speaker this last Tuesday, who was marvelous, and she's a friend of mine, I've known her for a long, long time, but she said, you can't fix resentment with resentment. It sounds silly, but it's absolutely true. And how do we master these things? Because of myself, by myself, not only could I not stop drinking, but we have to know that we have resentment in order to treat them. And the first three steps for me, and what I experienced was that they're so divinely written that it led up to that fourth step of that searching and fearless moral inventory. I mean, moral was like, that scared the hell out of me because, you know, I'd lost that compass long before it got to you. And I certainly wasn't raised in the habits and defects that I acquired in my drinking. And but they had to go. My sponsor was very explicit about that. She said, "Honey, they've got to go," because everybody would whine about the fourth step and say, "Oh, you know, wow, you got to write that inventory and you got to write down all your resentments." And so it just seemed like all of us newcomers, there were a number of us that all got sober together, that we were all afraid of that fourth step. And yet, without that, there's no way I could go through the rest of the steps. It won't ha I don't believe it'll happen for any of us. But what am I going to do with them? You know, I so in the book, and so I think this is sometimes overlooked, but in the book, page 64, where it says resentment is the number one offender, it destroys more alcoholics than anything else. That's a huge statement. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. Well, I was spiritually bankrupt when I got to AA. I'd long since deserted whatever God I had as a child. I am baptized in the Greek Orthodox Church. My mother was full Greek. She was a daughter of Greek immigrants, but I always had an agenda. I got baptized because I was going to marry a Greek guy with a green card that I met in an ouzo bar and go live in a hut outside of Greece or something. I mean, I embrace it now in my life, and I have for many years when I straightened out my feelings about that. But it says, you know, for we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. Because As long as I have resentments, the problem that I had, maybe you had this too, or haven't, when you get a resentment, the book doesn't say, well, never get angry. It says we can't stay angry. We're human. We're human. We're gonna feel. And you know that thing when we get sober, they say, you, oh yeah, honey, you're gonna feel better. And then they tell you a little later, but you're gonna feel everything better. And so what do I do with this? Because I tried everything, and I didn't even come to AA to get sober. I came to get the guy I was with out of the meeting, and I ended up getting sober. And how do I fix the thinker with the thinker I've got? How do I even look at this when I don't even think I have it? And there's an old saying for the newcomers about being an alcoholic: if you don't have our problem, you'll never need our solution. And so, but we take care of that in the first step. And so it says, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. Well, so she sat me down, and in the book on page 65, it only addresses the first three columns. And I looked at that, Mr. Brown. I thought, wow, he's got some problems, right? Because I'm always pointing the finger out. I can't look at me, right? But all of this has to come out through the steps so the God of my understanding can go in. But in my drinking, I'm building cases against people. I'm constantly building a case, right? And I'm shoving it down, and I'm shoving it down, and I'm shoving it down. And then it's leaking out in my life. I mean, you don't even have to be the person that I actually have a resentment against. But if you have the same name of the person that I resent, you say your name, I'm immediately sparked, right? Like, I won't even like you, right? Because I'm so full of self, and I couldn't drink it away, couldn't sex it away, couldn't buy it away, couldn't dance it away, couldn't, it can't, it has to, it can only happen through this psychic change in the spiritual acts and the steps. A psychic change. And that's what Clancy used to talk about, a disease of perception. My perception was so distorted when I got sober. I thought everybody lied, everybody cheated. What I thought an alcoholic was anyone who drank more than me. So you can keep drinking a long time if you think like that. But see, that's all distortion. And when it says, you know, we listed people, institutions, or principals with whom we were angry and So my sponsor said, all right, God to you to pen to paper, back to God, honey, get busy. We went through it in the book. She didn't coddle me. She was loving, but she was direct. And when I balked, her common phrase, you're gonna live sober or you're gonna die drunk. Which one is it? I'm like, you know, and I'm thinking, can't you just teach me how to drink right? I mean, I'm willing. So she said, God to you to pen to paper, back to God in that fifth step. And without that, you cannot take a fifth step. And the book talks about the fifth step being something you will not want to miss. And so in the book, you know, where it describes who do you resent, what is the resentment, and what does it affect? Well, self-esteem, pocketbook ambition, personal relations, sex relations, pride, ego, fear, security. And I kept calling her back, going, now what do I do? See, because one of the other thing problems that I have when I got sober is I want you to do it for me, right? Because I just want to be a Greek sobriety goddess. I just want you write it. Can you type it? Can we do that? No, get your pen out. So I write, you know, I resent. And you know, there was something about that, because getting to write about what they did to me, it was like lightning came through my roof, struck my pen, and I was on fire, because that's all I knew. Do you know what they did to me? Do you know what they said to me? Do you know what I didn't get? And I learned in sobriety that sometimes I get what I want and sometimes I get what I need, but I always get what I get. And so my pen was on fire. The guy I came in with, he was an alcoholic, of course. And I had, because I counted them, I had 162 resentments against him. And I wrote every single one of them out and what it affected, what it was and what it affected. And then, you know, it says we went back through our lives. Nothing counted. Nothing, nothing. Zero. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. And then, so the first three columns went first. And I did all that, and I couldn't wait to read it to her. And then she said, "Okay, go to page 66 to the last paragraph." We turned back to the list. I said, "Wait, what?" We turned back to the list. Wait a minute. I got 162 resentments against one guy. This, I mean, my notebook was, I said, "What?" And then it says, "For it held the key to the future." And the future they're talking about is our sobriety, living, not just not drinking, but living sober, feeling sober, and a willingness to be sober. We're prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. And now I have questions, right? And I'm not happy. And she goes on, and I'm not going to read it all, but it says, we began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, I fit both categories, had power to actually kill. Kill. And maybe it won't kill me physically. It'll kill me mentally. It'll kill me emotionally. It's killing me spiritually. It's killing me physically. I had severe panic attacks for 10 years prior to getting to you guys. Severe. I was institutionalized twice. I wouldn't talk about my drinking, well, because they might want to make me stop. I even saw the psychiatrist who wrote the book, "I'm okay, you're okay." But see, I'm a liar, right? There used to be a speaker named Alabama. And can you tell what time am I supposed to stop?
You have about 13 more minutes, hon.
Okay, all right, 13. Okay. There used to be a speaker named Alabama, and I loved her. I met her several times, and she'd say, "I'll tell you the truth just as soon as I can get it past myself." And I thought, "Oh my God, I love this woman." Because, right? I'll tell you the truth as soon as I can get it past myself. Because when I'm the only person I'm listening to, I'm going to stay sick. I needed that sponsor. I needed the book. I need the steps. I need that voice bigger than my own head to pull me along. And it says, you know, we saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. And this is to me where the rubber really meets the road, because if there's one thing, and you know, I've been sober a long time, so much, and good to see you, George. George, I don't think he can hear me, but George is a very long, oh, he can. He's a longtime friend of mine. I can't stay sick and stay sober. You either grow or you go. That's what they said to me. You grow or you go. And you'll think you're not gonna go, right? I'm fine. But see, if it's me talking to me and I haven't put it on paper and taken that fifth step, I'm destined to drink again. So it says this was our course, and it gives these instructions. And then it says we avoid retaliation or argument. Wait a minute, those are my best features about friendships. How can I get back at you? Right? And I'm not arguing. I'm just telling you how I feel. I was arguing. I was always arguing. And But it says, you know, we can't, it fellow shows how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one, referring to our list again. I'm like, oh, wait, again, and again. And now, you know, I remember, and okay, I'll get there. Putting out of our minds the wrongs that others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. I said, wait a minute. Did you not? She kind of looked at, well, she didn't read what I wrote, but she saw the book I had written. And I said, wait a minute. You can't weigh me against all of this. She said, keep reading. Where had we been? Selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. And that scared me because, so I was an A student all through school. I was in an accelerated program, pilot program in the 60s, 3 years of work in 2 years, graduated high school at 16. Well, I got a B in self-control in the fourth grade. I'm still writing on that one. I'm a test taker, right? I can do this. But I looked at that, and you know why I got scared? Because I got scared that it wouldn't work for me. That was just more self-centeredness. Oh yeah, God will only watch over everybody else except you, Linda. You to pen to paper. God to you, you to God to you, you to pen to paper, back to God. Get writing, honey. And I bought at some of these. We bought. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but there is no easier, softer way. And it goes on to say, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? It doesn't say what was our part. She pointed that out ad nauseum. It doesn't say your part because your part insinuates they had a part. That's the insinuation. Where were you to blame? That's what you need to know. Because the only thing that will change an old idea is a new one. And in this process, I saw one of what I believe is one of the most absolute, vital, and most important aspect of staying sober and living these steps and work, you know, following these steps, doing the work, is that I had better be willing to take action, whether I like it, whether I believe it, long before I believe in it. If I had been waiting to do it until I believed it, I'd be dead. Bring the body, the mind follows. We do the footwork, God takes care of the results. These are all the things they said to me. And little by little, so when we saw our faults, we listed them, we placed them in black and white, and we admitted our wrongs honestly. So I would call her and go, now, what am I supposed to do with that fourth column? Because I'm stubborn and I'm selfish and I'm self-seeking and I don't want you to see me. I don't want you to see the person I am when I drink, the people I injured. I also don't want to do it because I've heard about the ninth step. See, I'm already over there, right? As I'm writing, I'm thinking, I gotta call her and tell her I am not making amends to this one and this one. And she'd say, honey, it's right here, right now. Don't borrow sorrow from tomorrow. Get your foot out of yesterday or into tomorrow. Today is the gift. That's why they call it the present. So I started writing, and everything I wrote, she had me separate each resentment out. I mean, it was insane, but I was insane. They called me Crazy Linda the first year. I took it as a compliment. And I wrote my resentments. You know, where was I to blame? Selfish because, dishonest because, self-seeking because, frightened because, you wouldn't love me, you wouldn't like me, you wouldn't give me what I wanted. And it was me, my I, and I got it done. And then we met. She came to my house. She said, all right, I want you, what she read, we read the step. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Exact. And she had me read the first few that I did to make sure I was doing it right. She said, 'cause Because I don't want you to write the whole thing and have to rewrite it, honey, because you're either going to do it the way the book says and live, or you're going to wing it and maybe die of this disease. And so, and we sat down. 7 hours later, she fell asleep twice. I had to wake her up. Well, she wasn't snoring. It wasn't a long sleep, but she not, I mean, wouldn't you? 7 hours. I will never forget that day. Never forget that day. That this person who approached me at that first meeting, who saw this bar girl in her best tube top and bar jeans. Well, if you didn't go through the 1670s, you missed it. My night makeup. Bad language, bad attitude, terrified, insecure, hurting, insecure egotist. But see, I don't want to go back to the psych ward. I did two tours. Where am I going to go now? What if this won't work for me? But I read it to her. She said, read exactly what you wrote. Don't stop. Don't speed through it. Just read it. And as I read it, I started to cry, like probably pretty quickly. It was hard. Because the more times you read dishonest, selfish, self-seeking, and frightened, it's like it's just it's all been right here for years. I'm 73 now. And, you know, I was 29 and a half when I first came to. I had to change my date. And I was 30 when I changed my date. And I'm coming up on 43 years. And it had to come out. It all had to come out. And as I read it to her, it was like this. Something, this feeling, this, I can't, you know, it's hard to explain it. It's like you don't know when God's coming, but you know when he's been there. And so what does admitted to God mean? Because I thought, well, I told her, I said, God already knows. Come on, if I can't see, touch, or feel him, but I kind of can, but I don't. You know, I'm trying because I miss God. I miss that God I had as a child. My first son died an hour after he was born when I was drinking, and I always that was God was on my resentment list. I thought he was punishing me. I found out that he wasn't. And at 8 years sober, I had a service for my son because I was too sick and drunk to survive it at the time. And when they institutionalized me, they did electric shock therapy on me. And it terrified me, but it didn't get me sober. You got me sober. God got me sober. The steps got me sober. So I can have this life. So I can live in my own skin. So admitted to God, it was like a 7 hour prayer, 3 minutes. Thank you. It was like a 7 hour prayer. Here I am, God. I am. It's raw and it's real. And then to ourselves, I needed to hear myself say it. And I couldn't deny any of it because that's the miracle of writing it. God to me to pen. God God to me, me to pen, pen to paper, back to God. That's a miracle of writing because I can't deny it because it's in my own hand. And I need to hear myself say it, and I need to admit it to another human being so that the secrets can come out. And I have a lot of them. It all had to come out. And it did. It came out. And there was more work to do. But I remember at the end of it, I was bawling like a baby. And I knew I needed the rest of the steps because I couldn't just live with that, right? What would happen if we had to stop there? And she said, you know, Linda, this is a courageous step. And the most important thing about what you have done here today is that it doesn't belong to any AA member until you do it. Then it's yours. Because when I was new, it was your group and I was just sitting in it. I was in a group one day after the meeting. The lady had talked about that day in the meeting about the magic of AA, and I was standing there and everybody was doing something, and I'm standing there. And this guy, I can't remember his name, he was mopping by me and he said, "How you doing, Linda?" And I said, "Oh, I'm just waiting for the magic of AA to happen." And he took the mop and he went, "The magic's in the mop, honey, get busy." And I've been mopping ever since. But you know, and you know, I've had the privilege of speaking all over A, and it's a privilege. But I gotta tell you, I remember being in a group and I spoke that night, and 20 minutes later, I'm in the kitchen washing cups, and a guy came up to me and he grabbed the cup out of my hand. He said, "You can't wash cups. You're our guest. You're the speaker." And I pulled the cup back. I said, "No, 20 minutes ago, I was the speaker, sweetie. Now I'm the cup washer. That's how it works. You want a towel to dry?" So without these two vital steps, I couldn't move on and I couldn't clean up the wreckage of my past. And I hope that you will pray to the God of your understanding if you're new. Rely on your sponsor, the book, and just take these actions long before you ever believe in them. There's a canyon, there's a tightrope. God's standing there with a wheelbarrow. And we're standing on the sidelines going across this canyon on a tightrope. Go for it, God. You can do it. That's faith. But faith without works is dead. Trust is different. Trust is an action. And when you get in the wheelbarrow, you turn to God and say, "Let's go." That's the deal here. Thank you for letting me share. I hope I didn't go over. I think I, one minute. I'm sorry.